This episode of HPC Wire Soundbite is sponsored by Mellanox Technologies, the leading supplier of end-to-end FDR 56 gigabits per second InfiniBand connectivity solutions for HPC and cloud server and storage clustering. www.mellanox.com.
This is HPC Wire Soundbite, your weekly source of commentary and insight on the HPC stories shaping the industry. With Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and Addison Snell, CEO of Intersect 360 Research. And now, here are your hosts, Michael Feldman and Addison Snell.
Addison's report card for digital manufacturing.
WellPoint paging Dr. Watson.
Hello, everyone, and good morning for HPC Wire Soundbite for September 16, 2011. Available every Friday on iTunes and Stitcher. I'm Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and I'm joined by Addison Snell of Intertech 360 Research. Hey, good morning, Addison.
Good morning, Michael.
Well, you know, there's a little bit of news this week, and we'll get to in a minute, but you wrote a really interesting article on Digital Manufacturing Report, our sister publication. I want to talk about that, and also on the various initiatives in digital manufacturing, how that links up to the missing middle, and I really enjoyed it. Can you kind of just talk a little bit about it briefly, and then we'll get into it a little deeper.
Yeah, I'd love to talk about this article. As you know, Intersect 360 Research has done a lot of studies on entry-level and mid-range computing in HPC, and in particular, a lot of that going into digital manufacturing, or what they're calling the missing middle, which is the quippy name for the advanced technology gap that exists between large and small manufacturers, where we found that the penetration for manufacturers with under 100 employees is really quite low for HPC, and that's the vast majority of U.S. manufacturing, and it's right. Really created a national competitiveness issue because most of our manufacturers aren't making use of these best-of-breed technologies.
Right, and we've talked about this on a number of occasions, and there are a lot of initiatives out there. There's a lot of industry groups in the U.S., and people are addressing this, but in various ways.
That was the point of this article, is there's so many initiatives that have been launched over the last year, some of them on the vendor side, some consortium, some in government, and they're not all equally effective. So the point of this editorial was to go through them, describe what they are, and give them all grades according to what they've done so far, how well they address the missing middle, and what their prospects are for future success. And I felt like I wanted to write this because I've been personally involved in almost all of them, and those that I haven't been involved in, I've wanted to be more involved in. We've put a lot of effort into these, and they're not all equal.
Right. The ones you mentioned just briefly, I mean, there's the Alliance for High Performance Digital Manufacturing, there's the NCMS group, which we've talked about quite a bit, and then there's the America Competes Reauthorization Act, which was just enacted, as well as a few others. So without going through all of these,
Council on Competitiveness Endemic Program, and then there's also various vendor-based initiatives that I don't even get into grading separately.
Right, there's a whole lot that's underneath this as well. So, without trying to go through the whole article and everything here, just generally, let's start on the positive side. What are people doing well in this arena right now?
Well, the ones that are doing the best are doing the most in terms of outreach to the actual small manufacturing community. And one organization that's well positioned to do that is NCMS. And if you look at their involvement in the Alliance for High Performance Digital Manufacturing, their creation of a strategic interest group for digital manufacturing, their formation of these predictive innovation centers, those all have various aspects of success in terms of how they can actually reach out to these manufacturers and give them peer examples of how they can start doing better. Those are some of the better looking initiatives right now.
So yeah, and when we've certainly read a lot about it in Digital Manufacturing Report about what they're doing. So yeah, they do seem very ensconced in this area, and they've done a lot of activity that does seem like is making headway. So of those groups, the other groups and initiatives you talked about, what is poorly done right now?
Well, one of the common mistakes that happens in a lot of these initiatives is that they're not well enough informed around what the specific barriers are for adopting digital manufacturing, and it goes well beyond providing access to the technology. And furthermore, when you get into the barriers around expertise or coordinating your workflow to integrate digital simulation for the first time, it's important to look at whom specifically are you targeting with a given initiative. Are you trying to take someone from a desktop CAD environment into a desktop digital manufacturing environment? Are you trying to take them off the desktop and into a cluster? Are you dealing with someone who's never done any computer drawing at all? These are very different segments that have different hurdles, and you need to be exceptionally well informed and well thought out about whom you're trying to address, which of these groups you're trying to address if you're going to have a successful multi-year program for assisting people in adoption.
Right. I mean, I guess this is like sort of any situation where you're sort of trying to get two groups together that traditionally have not talked to each other. I mean, you've got the techies, the HPC guys, and the related technologies, and then you've got the manufacturing groups, and culturally and historically they've grown up differently. And I guess it's always a challenge to bring those disparate groups together. But yeah, I mean, groups like NCMS, it looks like they're gathering the right information to do that. But it's always right. Seems like a cultural, challenge more than anything else to get groups together like this.
With a small manufacturer, you're not even always talking about replacing physical testing in a way. I mean, I was talking just last week to the CEO of a wiper blade company, and he's talking about, he gets it. He's got a problem with wind lift on the wiper blade, right?
Right.
So how can he test that? One is he could put it in a wind tunnel, which he doesn't have one of, and there aren't that many around,
right?
He can't go and borrow General Motors wind tunnel, right? So that's out. Or he can do a very expensive computer simulation, which he's aware of that technology exists, but he doesn't have those resources, that expertise in-house. He doesn't have the digital models. So what they do instead is they rent a car, they bolt the wiper blades out, they go out on the highway with a clipboard.
Right. Sure.
And he can't make it rain, and he can't make it snow, and he can't, do it on different cars with different shaped windshields. So, it's incomplete. And it's not that he doesn't understand the problem. It's just that you need to do a lot to lower the cost and risk to help out a manufacturer like that.
Yeah. I mean, it seems sort of simple to us in that, we're so aware of the technologies and the vendors that will support them, but to a small business manufacturer who maybe knows about it, like you said, in sort of the abstract, but's never used it and doesn't know how to get from here to there, it's probably just this insurmountable hurdle. But, these initiatives might help. I was particularly interested. I think we should at least touch on sort of the government side of this. I mean, part of what's supposed to be driving this is the America Competes Act, the thing that was just reauthorized, the legislation reauthorized just a few months ago. And you gave a pretty poor grade to that.
Well, I gave it a good grade in terms of how well it theoretically addresses the missing middle. The language in Section 605 of the America Competes Act, which was signed into law in January this year, does an excellent job outlining the problem and saying what ought to be done. The problem and where it gives a bad grade is, as far as I can tell and as far as the people I'm in these various initiatives can tell, is we haven't seen any action on it yet, despite the fact that there have been several explicit deadline. So the question then in terms of future success is, which would you rather? Would you rather hope that there really is stuff going on there that we're not aware of, but it might not be well informed? And do you want to actually have government mandate or legislate something around the missing middle? Or do you hope that it's just been forgotten because you're not sure that this is the best use of taxpayer money when there's other initiatives that might be doing a better job? And which of those you hope for might have to do with your economic and political party affiliations. And I'm not going to say what the answer is, but we gave them an incomplete in terms of what their prospects are for success. We just haven't seen the action yet.
Right, and I would say, given the political climate that exists today, I can't see that changing in the short term, which means the federal government, although there's been a lot of talk lately about the manufacturing sector, I mean, this particular part of it that gets the technology, injects technology into it, seems like almost a dead end. Do you think that's a bad thing, sir, that the federal government might be left out of this sort of trend and initiative to get the technology, hook it into the digital manufacturers?
I personally don't mind some federal government involvement, but I personally believe that the role of the federal government in solving this problem is getting a little bit overstated. They can provide some incentives or targets, but I don't think that the government should be mandating what the solutions are for this sort of thing. I think that free markets in general are better at addressing those things, and I do comment on some of the vendor initiatives in my editorial as well. I did like the America Competes Act. I would like this problem to be studied. I'd like to see what incentives they can provide manufacturers or what they can do to help lower the cost and risk. Not make it no cost, no risk, just lower cost, lower risk to invest in digital manufacturing. On the flip side, I think the role of academia has been underappreciated. Academia does not have a missing middle. They, even small colleges and universities have some HPC in them, including for engineering. And if we could, maybe one area that the government could enable is helping provide incentives for technology and expertise transfer between university and industry, and there are some successful examples of that already with like the Ohio State Blue Collar Computing Initiative or the STAR program at TAC. These are all things that have worked pretty well in pockets.
Right. Well, we're definitely going to be following all these initiatives as they play out.
So will we. I'm in them up to my elbows. I'd like to see some of these really succeed.
Excellent. Well, I encourage everybody to read that excellent article in Digital Manufacturing Report this week. It is eye-opening. It's got a lot of good information and perspective from Addison. So,
I post my office hours for anyone who doesn't like their grades.
Yeah, I'm sure you'll get some interesting feedback from that. But let's take a short break, and then we'll come back with our second story.
Mellanox's end-to-end FDR 56 gigabits per second InfiniBand connectivity products, consisting of ConnectX3 I/O adapter products, comprehensive SX6000 family of fixed and modular switches, software, and cables, deliver industry-leading performance, scalability, efficiency, and economics for the best return on investment for performance interconnects. Mellanox provides its worldwide customers with the broadest, most advanced, and highest-performing end-to-end networking solutions for the world's most compute-demanding applications. For more information on Mellanox's end-to-end connectivity solutions for HPC and cloud server and storage clustering, visit www.mellanox.com.
So, Michael, we're coming back in from our break. We were talking about something I wrote for the first half of the show. Let's go over to something that you wrote, and it looks like our old friend Watson is back in the news. I never get sick of talking about that guy.
Well, that computer never seems to be out of the news. He's always doing something. IBM is like pushing that technology everywhere, but this is sort of...
Apparently, since we last talked about Watson, he's gone to medical school. He's a doctor now.
Yeah, he's a doctor, right. I mean, this was sort of telegraphed a while back after they put the system up for the Jeopardy match and won that big show, and they talked about the next gig was going to be in the healthcare field, and they started getting involved there, and they announced this week that WellPoint, the insurance company, we'll be using the technology to drive some analytics with their providers, Blue Cross Blue Shield. So basically, they're going to use the technology, not the actual system necessarily that was at Jeopardy, but the technology, certainly the software, apply it on a similar system, and use it to be able to generate diagnoses and treatment options for real live patients.
Well, I mean, this is, as you pointed out, a direction that they wanted this artificial intelligence to go, and it's interesting to see it already getting adopted. I personally thought it would have taken longer than that. Now, I don't know how well adopted this is, or if they're just testing it out at this point. But this is the sort of technology they were talking about before, right? Where you're comparing the the point-to-point bits of knowledge that you have and using it to come together for an answer.
Right, exactly. It's the same general idea. To me, this is a much more sophisticated application than just correlating sort of trivial pursuit facts and coming up with an answer, because they have to go through, you know, research studies, medical texts, patient records, and weigh all that information, because it's not all the same quality of information. It doesn't have all the same weight when you're coming up with a diagnosis or a treatment. So to me, it's sort of a different level of artificial intelligence they're going to need to do this than what they were doing for the Jeopardy match, although they're going to use the same technology, the deep QA technology, and the applications are going to be developed, I guess, over the next 6 months. I think they're looking to actually deploy the application or the application set sometime early 2012 and then sort of get it up with a pilot study with WellPoint and select physicians. But, yeah, this is quite interesting.
And you mentioned the physicians. This is an important point. This is not displacing the physicians, right? This is a tool that's going to aid the physician's diagnosis. The physician is not out of the loop, right?
Right. There's going to be a physician at the end. This is going to be a tool. So you're going to feed the information in, the symptoms, you know, the stuff that the physician has on the patient records. And then he's going to look up the database of all the information of, you know, white paper studies, medical texts, and correlate that. And then offer options, you know, basically like they did at Jeopardy. They had different ratings for confidence for the different answers and present that to the physician. So it's not where a patient could like log onto the web and, you know, ask Dr. Watson, what's wrong with me? Nothing like that. There's going to be a physician in between it at this point. So a little bit of a safety valve.
You know, as I do with a lot of industries with HPC, I wind up worrying about the liability aspect of this. This is, you know, you're pushing into a new area here of someone's going to sue the insurance company now because the computer made a bad recommendation.
Yeah.
I mean, if Watson got a question wrong on Jeopardy, they'd lose $800 off his score, but no one sued him for it.
Right, right. Well, there is going to be, like we just said, there's going to be a human there, but And really, it's, I mean, you can look at it as just another tool. I mean, the doctors already use digital technology to make decisions and look up records. And like, presumably, somebody could sue a computer manufacturer or a software manufacturer for giving the wrong answer, even for a very simple application. I guess this makes it more visible if the doctor actually took a recommendation that was directly offered by Watson.
I wouldn't put IBM in those crosshairs. I think it's the same as any application of technology. The computer's going to give you an answer, and people will point their finger at the computer and blame, but it has to do with the algorithm and the data that went into the computer. The computer is doing input-output stuff, and you might point your finger at who wrote an algorithm or who put the wrong data in, but I wouldn't suggest that IBM is going to have liability here, there, if anything, providing a better tool for diagnoses.
Right. You know, another sort of controversial aspect to this is, you know, basically the healthcare system is broken in various places now. And is this going to even help? I mean, you're just applying the technology to a system that really doesn't have the right set of motivations. In other words, are they going to ask Dr. Watson to come up with, you know, the cheapest diagnosis or the cheapest treatment that's possible? Because WellPoint, their motivation is to lower costs, their providers as well. So I think people are actually more worried about that sort of thing, that it's going to be such that the rationale for these answers is going to be, you know, economic rather than directed towards actual optimal health outcomes.
Well, and that's been a concern with regards to insurance in healthcare that goes well beyond HPC and again gets into a political argument that I don't know if you and I are the most qualified or the most entertaining. We might be the most entertaining people to have our listeners to get on here and talk about politics and see how we do for a little while. But I think that goes beyond the scope of the HPC conversation to talk about how much role should the insurance company have in steering diagnoses.
Yeah, only in the sense that now they can sort of maybe hide behind this technology and say, well, this is the answer this high-performance system came up with. It's not us making these decisions anymore. These are best practice decisions according to, you know, whatever standards we program. So,
I don't buy that at all. You look, people have that same argument when they come out with the college football rankings. You say, well, I'll put that team number one. So, well, the computer said it, and the computer does it. You know, forget it. That's garbage. Someone wrote the algorithm. that says this is how we weight these things. The computer didn't put any thought into it in the sense of making a decision of how to do these the rankings. Now, certainly IBM goes further in artificial intelligence than anything else has gone before, but someone still has to teach it how to do these ratings.
Oh, agreed.
And if there's a flaw in those algorithms, then they still have to be culpable for that.
Right, but I mean, you and I know that, but I mean, a lot of the general public, I think, puts a lot of trust in what comes out of computers, and they think, okay,
oh, totally,
that's the answer. And yeah, we as somebody sort of in the industry, we can say, well, it was the algorithms. We can question that because we know those answers are only as good as the software. But a lot of people, you know, will look at that a lot differently and
totally
trust the machines. And I think it will sort of muddy the waters if these systems are coming up with diagnoses that or treatments that were not completely human driven. I think it'll be an interesting thing to watch, even in that sense.
You're absolutely right. You want to win any negotiation. Sit there, open your laptop, open a spreadsheet on your laptop, and pretend to type on it while you say, well, according to this, I can't possibly do anything. $125,
exactly.
Right? The computer said so. It doesn't matter what's on the computer. You've got a laptop. You must be right.
Exactly. Well, I mean, this is going to be...
Just ask me. I'm in market research. Sheets and all our numbers are correct.
Yeah, there you go. You know how to do that. So we'll definitely be following this. I mean, this I think is a very interesting application. It's not going to be the last application for Watson. They've talked about financial services and other sort of the more lucrative, low-hanging fruit for this type of technology. So it'll be something in development, and eventually I think we are going to see this in practice. I think the first thing we're going to see next year is going to be basically a pilot study, but I think eventually we will see this in actual practice. So
good for Dr. Watson. I love seeing this story. This is fundamentally a very good thing, and I can't wait to see how it gets deployed.
I too.
Let's get one more quick break, come back, and as a wrap-up, we'll talk about IDF real quick.
This episode of HPC Wire Soundbite has been sponsored by Mellanox Technologies, the leading supplier of end-to-end FDR 56 gigabits per second InfiniBand connectivity solutions for HPC and cloud server and storage clustering. www.mellanox.com.
Okay, Addison, you were at IDF this week up there in the Bay Area. I sort of missed that, but can you tell us anything what went on there as far as our little neck of the woods?
Yeah, well, our whole team was up there. It's a three-day event, and I was up there. Chris Willard was up there. Laura Siegerval was up there. They've always got some interesting keynotes. It's fun to look at what's new in all of these different areas, from, Ultrabook PCs all the way up through servers and into the realm of high-performance computing. With regards to HPC, there wasn't a whole lot new. I wasn't expecting a whole lot new. There wasn't slated to be something that was a really big new announcement. They certainly talked about many integrated core. They talked about 22 nanometer, and they talked about their marching along down the path. I had the right one-on-one meetings, and everyone's feeling very confident. I enjoy IDF. It's fun to go and see all the energy around it.
Right, I caught sort of a late announcement there. They have, I guess, begun shipping, and they announced this there. They announced shipping their 8-core, basically Sandy Bridge Xeon chips, their E5 chips,
right,
that they're calling them, for servers. And I guess they've been shipping them for a while, but the servers aren't going to show up until probably early next year. And AMD, of course, just announced the Interlagos, the Bulldozer-based Interlagos chips. So it looks like those two are going to go head-to-head in 2012, and we'll have to see how that develops. That's kind of an interesting little CPU matchup that is playing out in HPC right now.
Sure, and a little bit of gamesmanship, AMD getting its announcement out during IDF. That's pretty typical between these two.
Well, right before IDF, so yeah, they wanted to get that in there, even though there's no actual deployments on that. So yeah, everybody's sort of jockeying there. So yeah, that was expected. Everybody looks like they're at least on time with their shipments and CPUs, so it will be a nice little matchup and see if it changes the market share over the next 3 to 6 months. Interesting technology that's going up.
One interesting bit of feedback I'll give is I did sit in on the technical session for Many Integrated Core, and there were, you know, a fair number of end users in there. People were experimenting with it. And, you know, when Intel made its assertions about it being easy to use or about using Intel tools for these things, people were generally nodding along, including people who've been testing them. Thus far, Intel Mike seems to be living up to its billing for being fairly straightforward in terms of migrating your codes from Xeon to being accelerated by Mike.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard the same thing. So yeah, I mean, I think everybody's just really anticipating the commercial launch of that. But I've heard the same thing, that people are generally pleased with ease of use, ease of application porting. So that's kind of encouraging.
Yeah, so in this case, no news really is good news, in the sense that we weren't expecting any big announcement. And for Intel to step up and say, look, we said a while ago, here's the timeline we were going to be on, here's where we are on it, and we're still on schedule going forward, I think that's about the most positive update we could have hoped for.
Okay. Well, I think that wraps up our show for today, and we'll do it all again next week.
Yep, we're going to have more to talk about next week. We're getting into the swing of the conference season. Next week we'll have some news about the HPC and financial markets event.
Excellent. And until then, Addison, have a great week.
Great. Thanks, Michael.
You've been listening to HPC Wire Soundbite with Michael Feldman and Addison Snell. Got a question or comment for Michael or Addison? Email soundbite@hpcwire.com. HPC Wire Soundbite is available every Friday afternoon from iTunes or at hpcwire.com. HPC Wire, the leading source for global news and information covering the ecosystem of high productivity computing.